Hello and welcome to Talk from Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Ivamy.
And me? Well, I'm Diana McCollum.
That girl over there? Well, that's Diana McCollum.
Oh, who, me?
You?
Yes, Diana.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Wow. You're listening to Talk from Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of heroic television or film. And this week on the podcast, we are continuing our Matrix month, our Matrix celebration.
Our matrices.
Our matrices, if you nasty. We're plugging in, we're logging on, we're booting
up.
We're dialing it in.
We're kicking ass, we're wearing sunglasses.
We're talking about the Matrix Reloaded.
We are talking about Matrix 2.
Two Reloaded.
I need to say the numbers. Because you know what?
And right normally, I'm the one who needs to say the numbers. This is a fun, like, dynamic shift for the two of us.
It really is, because I am normally like, I like a name. I like a name that tells you something about the movie you're going to watch, though. And the Matrix movies all have the same name. Reloaded and Revolutions are very, very similar.
Yeah.
And this is what I didn't know as someone who hadn't seen 2 and 3. These movies came out the same year. So if you check the year to find out which one's 2 and which one's 3, it's not helpful.
Yeah. This is...
both came out in 2003.
This is 2003's Matrix movie, not to be confused with 2003's other Matrix movie.
That starts with an R and is a one word.
Term. Yes, obviously. I don't know who could get confused. Come on.
Furious.
I've seen.
I'm so mad. I had to read an article to figure out which was which.
I've seen each of these movies dozens of times. Mm-hmm. I've seen them many times. I am a fan. I am a student of the Matrix. And even last week when we were covering The Matrix, I was like, next week we'll be talking about Reloaded? Like, there was no, I had no confidence with which I said that subtitle.
It has nothing to do with what's happening.
No.
It is not a Harry Potter and the Phoenix. Like, and you're like, this is the movie with the Phoenix in it.
Right.
Or whatever those movies do.
This isn't like The Matrix, but the computer has ghosts and goblins. Like, it's not, there's no reference to what's going on in this movie. Like, they don't not reload. But they do, but like that's not anything.
Honestly, they never shoot a gun, so there's very little reloading in this.
They shoot guns.
Not much. Because Neo is like anti-bullet in this one, so it's mostly
a lot of hand to hand. You're right. You are right. I think there
is very little reloading.
I think there is very little reloading. I think there is very little. I think it is like a classic Matrix thing is you shoot a gun till it's empty and you discard it like guns are disposable.
Mm.
And I don't know why guns are disposable and they never bring any kind of extra ammunition, but it's guns are a single use thing. So there is very little reloading if you take it from the weaponized sense and not the computerized sense.
Thank you. Oh, like a computer reloads.
Oh my God. Had you honestly not put together the double meaning of that?
Well, revolutions isn't a computer word, unless you're talking about when the disc spins.
That is a thing.
Oh, is that what we're talking about?
Maybe.
I'm disliking it more as I talk about it.
But also, it's like, they didn't not reload, but they didn't reload. Like, it's not particularly relevant,
you know?
I just
don't feel like, computerly, we say the word reload very often. We load things.
Yeah.
Like, you load a file.
You can reload a page if it didn't load properly.
You do reload a page.
But it's not... And it doesn't have a super relevance.
And it's like, a movie with guns.
And it is a movie with guns.
I thought it
so
was about the guns.
A double meaning. Yeah. I could see you. This all makes sense, but it's still also wild.
There's guns on the poster.
It can
There's
be
not
a lot
computer
of things.
On the poster.
So we're talking about The Matrix Reloaded.
We already have gotten into it. I'm sorry for the tangent, but also it's my job.
Yeah, it is your job. And
I'm going to get a raise, probably.
It means two things. And maybe revolutions are implying the physical disk hard drive the computer still had of the era, ?
I haven't seen Matrix 3 yet, but I'm going to hope it means the human revolution happening under the Earth. I'm going to hope.
Okay. But it could mean two things. Reloading could mean a literal thing. I think once we get to the new one, once we get to 4 coming out later this month. There's no computer. Resurrection is not a computer.
That's what I'm saying.
It is weird that Resurrection does break the, Revolutions is a maybe. But
there's only so many RE words.
That's the problem.
Recordings?
Yeah. Well, we're talking about Reloaded this week.
Resave.
Yeah, you... You know what? Why not? Why not? Fuck these titles. So this week we are talking about The Matrix Reloaded. We are doing all of them in build up to the release of the new Matrix, which is Resurrections, which is coming out soon. So what we're doing is we did The Matrix last week. Mm-hmm. We're doing Matrix Reloaded today. We are doing Matrix Revolutions.
You couldn't even.
It took me a second. On the Patreon. So we're doing the third one, Matrix Revolutions, on the Patreon. It's a Patreon exclusive. That'll be available right now. So as soon as you're finished listening to this, you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. And if you become a patron, you can get access to that exclusive episode. And then next week, we are covering Spider-Man, but the week after, we'll be covering the new Matrix film.
We apologize for Spider-Man breaking up our Matrices films.
He's a sticky boy and he slips right in.
Oh, his little webs.
Oh, you can't stop him.
He could be webs, Matrix webs. And you're like, oh, is it webs or is it the internet?
Hey, that's also an internet thing.
It's also an internet thing.
So I'm right there with you.
Matrix
webs. We're on the exact same wavelength today.
We're crushing it.
It's going to be great. Before we get into our full episode talking about The Matrix Reloaded, we want to thank one of our sponsors of today's episode. It is our friends over at HBO. Who are making Batman the Audio Adventures, and we'd like to tell you a little bit about Batman the Audio Adventures.
Bruce Wayne may appear to be a wealthy playboy, but beneath this facade, his true identity is that of the Batman, waging an endless war against crime. Join the Cape Crusader in Batman the Audio Adventures, the first scripted audio original featuring Batman and his villainous rogues gallery in a world premiere story of life and death in Gotham City, debuting exclusively on HBO Max.
Starring Jeffrey Wright as Batman and a who's who of incredible Saturday Night Live alums, this rollicking adventure told across 10 episodes is written and directed by Emmy winner Dennis McNicholas, includes devilishly delightful original music by Doug Bossi, and performances by Rosario Dawson, John Leguizamo, Chris Parnell, Melissa Villaseñor, Seth Meyers, Jason Sudeikis, Brooke Shields, Fred Armisen, and many, many more. Go to hbomax.com/Batman Audio Adventures for more and stream Batman the Audio Adventures only on HBO Max. And thank you, Batman the Audio Adventures, for your support.
And thank you, Batman.
And thank you.
For all you do for Gotham City.
For everything. And now let's get into the episode. Let's talk about The Matrix Reloaded.
2.
All right, so we have seen The Matrix Reloaded, me for the manyth time, Diana for the first time.
This is so weird that you've seen it so many times and we've never done a watch before.
It is kind of, well, like...
Like, it feels like it's your secret shame. Like, you must watch it when you're away or when I'm not around.
I don't know. It's just, like, I watch The Matrix because it's quite good. And then I'm like, well, we keep the train rolling, I guess. It just doesn't end, ?
I mean, I did kind of walk through the room the last time you rewatched them. Uh-huh. But it was, like, while you were working out and they were just on in the background. Like, yeah. It wasn't like...
It's not an intense rewatch.
I got popcorn and I'm sitting down and I'm watching it.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised, though, that... This was something that you hadn't seen, because I'm not saying that you're like a big Matrix fan, but you had seen the first one, and just globally, this was a huge, massive event. Like, this was a big film.
The only explanation I have for not seeing The Matrixes is that I was so busy in high school.
No.
I mean, that's literally the only thing I can think of. I was super, like, trying to get scholarships, and I had a bunch of extracurriculars. I'm like, I didn't care. I don't have time. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I could think.
Mm-hmm.
Literally my only explanation.
Mm-hmm. You did have extracurriculars, but that is, you were not super busy in high school.
I don't know why else I wouldn't have. I really liked one.
Fair enough. Yeah, and I'm not looking for, like, an excuse to put you... I'm not trying to put you on the hot seat. I was genuinely curious.
It's hot over here.
I'm sorry for making
it. No, there was no reason. I just... Never got around to it. I think I also didn't have nerdy friends in high school, so I might have had no one to go see it with.
Mm,
and then it just, like, never came up again.
Okay, interesting.
And it just was like, And then I just heard it's bad. So yeah, why okay. would I?
Fair enough. I think this came out because we're the same age.
I'm a year younger.
Oh, okay. So you were still in high school.
Old cradle robber.
All right. Because for me, I'm like, this was that in between high school and university era for me. I had nothing but time there. It was all time, baby. Well, for someone who just saw The Matrix Reloaded for the first time, did you like it?
This is kind of a weird qualification. As a sequel to the incredible film The Matrix, I hated it. It's very bad. It's not a good film. As a film just on its own connected to nothing, it's absolutely fine. When you think about it that way, when you're like, oh, wow, yeah, the action's pretty good and the story's pretty linear. You can still understand it. Like, it's not great, but it's fine. But as a sequel to The Matrix, it sucks. So it's kind of like a little up and down for me. So I'll say, like, for the most part, I didn't enjoy it, but it's only trash compared to the first one. Mm. Does that make sense?
No, that does make sense. Okay. Yeah.
Andrew, do you like The Matrix? Reload it.
No, I don't.
You've seen it dozens of times.
I've seen it way too many times. There are redeeming aspects. This is part of, like, you know, a huge trilogy of films. But I would say that, like, you know, from Alien to Prometheus, there has never been such a quality drop in what defines.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
A series. And obviously there were Aliens movies between and whatnot. But if you watched Alien, the first Alien movie, and then watched Prometheus, that is the same level of, like, pretentious but also poorly written, in a sense that it's almost comedy, but it has no sense of self or awareness about it. It is that level of quality difference.
And also, like, really great actors are here, and there's some technological wonders, but there is just nonsense happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The writing of this is a mess. I do find it, I find it almost impossible. I find it almost impossible to believe the same people wrote the first Matrix movie and this one. Wink. Maybe they, like, it feels like they didn't. That's something that allegedly you could Google, allegedly. Not gonna get us lawyers. I said allegedly and wink, and you can Google it for yourselves. But I have a tough time believing that the same people wrote this that wrote the first one, because it has none of the understanding of the themes, importance, relevance, or what is going on. It's the polar opposite, but there are some good performances. There's some remarkable action. The score remains to be one of the most incredible film scores I've ever heard. I absolutely love every piece of music. There's a lot to like, but I still don't like the movie.
Yes, that's fair. It's definitely got the same directors.
Mm-hmm.
The directors directed all the movies.
Yes, yeah. It has a coherent visual theme.
The visual style is coherent.
Yeah.
It's like the only compliment I have for the prequels. I'm like, the prequels are bad, but visually, they're absolutely the same of the Star Wars prequels.
Oh, like inherently consistent within episode 1, 2, and 3.
1, 2, and 3 look like one movie that was filmed all at the same time.
Right. There was no course correction between episode 1 and 2 where it was like, oops, people didn't like that. Let's change our 1, 2, and 3 have the same palette. I see what you're saying. I can agree with that.
And these movies have the same palette so far. I mean, I haven't seen 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good time. But yeah, this movie is... It makes you hurt from squinting. Like, because there are so many long conversations about choice and philosophy and do we need machines and do machines need us? And there's been 5 Neos. And I'm just, like, squinting as I think about it. I'm like, is it deep or is it dumb? And I'm just trying to figure out, is it deep or dumb? And I landed on dumb.
It's dumb.
But
it's
dumb. I gave it some leeway on deep for a long time.
I gave this, like, 2 years of leeway on deep.
It's a good chunk of leeway.
Yeah. So let's talk about, I'm going to share just, like, my personal experience with Reloaded.
Because I actually genuinely do want to hear this. Because as someone who, you were clearly a fan of one, like, what was your, like, first viewing experience of Reloaded, if you recall?
Denial.
Absolutely. Denial. Absolutely fair.
So I loved The Matrix. Mm-hmm. The Matrix, we didn't really talk about it on last week's episode, but The Matrix was, like, the reason I bought a DVD player.
Holy
and,
shit.
Like, not only was it, like, so technologically advanced, like, that was, I think, for a lot of people, that was the first DVD that it was, like, you have to own this. It looks incredible. Its sound design is incredible. Like, that was early on in, like, DVD players were, like, $500. It was expensive to get a DVD player and a surround sound system. It wasn't commonplace. But I remember being like, The Matrix is worth it.
Holy shit.
It is.
You were financially invested in The Matrix.
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember, like, my first job, my first several paychecks went to surround sound a DVD player in The Matrix.
Oh, man. I'm not going to tell you what my first DVDs were.
Oh, I can only imagine. Well, some other time.
This is your story.
So, I loved The Matrix. Reloaded comes out. It's the summer, I think, between high school and university. And I'm so hyped. And I think The Matrix is so brilliant in every regard. And I go to see Reloaded. And I remember leaving the theater. And I saw it twice the next day. Because I left the theater and I was like, it can't be that bad, can it? I was like, I must be misunderstanding it. I was mad at myself because I'm like, clearly this was good and I have failed this film somehow and I have to go. And this
I watched it bad.
This first year university era for me was a hot year of me getting gaslit by movies and TV shows because it was like Matrix, Reloaded, Revolutions, and Lost were like bang, bang, bang. All three of them were like, Andrew, see if you can understand the deeper meaning. We didn't have one. Fuck yeah. So it was such a hot year and a half of me just getting hard roasted for putting my faith in media that seemed intelligent.
You trying to find yourself in your first year of university and just being totally lost due to the media you consume is fucking wild.
Roasted. I got roasted. I saw it several times. I was like, I have. And then it did reach a point where I'm like, okay, it might be bad, but maybe the third one is going to like really add clarity and bring it all and stick the landing. And it didn't and doesn't. But that is my personal experience with The Matrix Reloaded.
Not to jump to the very end, but if you recall from your first viewing, did you know who the guy at the end was?
No.
On the table? Okay.
No.
I was worried I watched.
Absolutely not.
Much like you, I was like, I watched it bad.
Yes. Yep.
I don't know who that guy is.
Listeners, Diana is not referring to the architect, the long-winded coder who created The Matrix.
Because I know that's the architect. He introduced himself.
Diana is referring to Goatee Man, who Agent Smith took over, who is the final shot of the movie, and it's meant to be this ominous thing. But it's a guy we haven't really gotten to know, and he looks pale and different, and he's upside down for a single frame. The worst cliffhanger ending imaginable.
A man who has no real distinguishing features and upside down and not talking looks like a DH Cypher, which is who I thought it was. I was like, oh, wow, The Matrix DH'd Cypher from the first movie and put him in Zion.
Right.
And I'm like, sure, that makes as much sense as anything else.
Or they cloned Cypher.
If this is the fifth Neo, then this is the second Cypher. Sure.
Sure, why not?
But it's the guy who Agent Smith took over.
Yeah. So it was a terrible cliffhanger ending. I agree with you there.
All right.
I felt like Matrix Reloaded at the time and age that I was at. And also, this was early internet days. Like, I remember, like, getting on message forums and being like, can other people figure it out? Like, working collaboratively with people on the internet to be like, there has to be a deeper meaning to this. So it was a tough time. I felt like leaving the movie theater, seeing Matrix Reloaded, the same way years back we said and noticed that people responded to Age of Ultron.
Ooh, yep.
Which everyone agrees now was a bad movie. But me and you, we left it. We're like, that was just a bad movie. But for like 3 weeks, everyone in the world was like, another Avengers movie. They did it again. It was everyone was in denial.
Like friends of ours that we respect.
Yeah, we're like, that was as good as the first.
And
it just doesn't stop with this.
And we're like, no, guys, what were your favorite parts? No one had any. So yeah, there is
Reloaded is that feeling.
Totally.
But I was part of the groupthink denial.
I absolutely get it. Like so much build up, they filmed two at once. It's the same writers, directors. Why would it you must have watched it bad.
Yeah, the biggest budget in the world at the time, and also I think it made like the biggest box office in the world at the time.
I mean,
it was
you
bananas.
Went four times.
I went too many times.
So there's four movie tickets right there.
Ooh. All right. So this we're let's step aside from like personal backstory. Let's talk about it a little bit. We roasted the ending a little bit as a ridiculous thing to end it on. There is some strength off the top of this movie. Like, I like the opening with Trinity, even though I think it's cheesy and kind of dumb to start, like, in media res, and it's something you'll see later in the movie, and it's also a dream. That's a fun sequence. Trinity's a badass, and I also like Neo at this meeting just roasting ass with these new agents.
Neo at this meeting?
When they're having the meeting of the ship commanders.
Oh, the captains, and, like, the not captains, the agents. Yeah. Okay, because agents are different.
Right. Sorry. Well, like, the agents break up the meeting. Yeah, like, yeah. Smith drops off the earpiece, and then the new agents come in.
Fair enough. Yeah, because it opens up with, like, a little bit of action that way. And it's a little disjointed because it goes from her, like, the bike blows up the thing, and then suddenly she's falling out of a window, and I thought I blinked too long and missed something. And you're like, oh, it's a dream, whatever. It's a fine enough opening. It's like, I like that throughout this movie, Carrie Ann Moss gets dope things to do. My biggest compliment of this movie is the choreography and action, yet again, are incredible. They're, like, too long and don't have enough stakes, but the action, like, just on its own is incredibly well choreographed and filmed and shot and looks incredible. So, yeah, God, I've already forgotten this thing you're complimenting. What is this meeting with the other captains? What even happened? I remember he went to the door.
Who cares? There's a meeting with the captains.
We watched this an hour ago.
There was a meeting with the captains. Who cares what happened there? I can barely remember it. And then Agent Smith knocks on the door and drops off his earpiece and is like, thanks for freeing me. And then Neo comes up. And then, like, the new upgraded agents have that first fight scene with Neo in that hallway.
What's upgraded about them?
I think they were a little bit better fighters.
Were they?
I mean, like, okay. Neo goes to punch them and they block one. And he goes, huh, upgrades. So I think he's just like, that's a punch that would have landed on Agent Smith or whatever.
Okay.
Or the old busted models.
The old busted the old models. Busted they were models. Pretty good. They'd yeah. never defeated one.
That's
before.
True. But then they got defeated and they got upgraded.
And then he flew.
Yeah. So he's already broken powerful.
He's already broken. Yeah, that part kind of just waved over me. I honestly don't even remember it. The first thing in this movie that, like I think is, like, a memory is the fact that we go to Zion. I think that's huge and cool. And I really like Zion.
Oh, yeah?
I actually wish more of this movie was in Zion.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Well, you're in for a treat for the next one. But tell me more. Okay. What is it you like about Zion?
I like that the first movie is just, like, Zion exists, but you never go there. In this movie, we do get to, like, explore it. Like, there are other humans. It's not just because the first movie, because you're never there, it really does feel like it's just the people on the Nebuchadnezzar, maybe. Like, you could, like, Neo could be being gaslit. They could be all that's left. He's never been to Zion.
True.
Like, we don't know. Like, this seems like a thing Morpheus would absolutely lie about if Zion existed or not.
Yeah, I could see that.
That would have been a huge twist. Like, there is no Zion. So actually going there, like, I really liked it. I think what's just nice is, even though it's, like, kind of, like, all the philosophy stuff in this movie doesn't work, there is just something profoundly strong about Morpheus's belief in his beliefs, like, the strength of his beliefs and his, like, willing to fight for them in, like, meetings and big speeches and in councils, and the fact that the council believes in him, even though Larry Lennox? What's your name? The guy who the counselor doesn't.
Yes.
One of them doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I like seeing that there is humanity to fight for.
I get that.
This is not just like the people in the pods. Like, there is a real humanity to fight for, and the people in the pods are real people as well. But
right.
They're gonna live no matter what. They're just gonna be stuck in the Matrix.
Yes. Yeah. This is actually a fight for your life.
Yeah.
You've gained your freedom, and now you have to maintain it. It's the fight to maintain the freedom that you fought so hard to earn.
Yeah, and I just liked the introduction of characters and stakes and, like, really building this world out. I actually really like being in Zion. I loved Morpheus' speech. This whole look of, like, I'm gonna do a speech shirtless, like pop it off like a wrestler doing an opening bit.
It was a little wrestler, wasn't it?
He came out like Stone Cold saying they're gonna kick Vince McMahon's
right.
ass.
Like, JR's in the corner. My God, it's Morpheus.
He wasn't supposed to be here today. He's been kicked off of the council. He's got a steel chair.
Oh, no. I
look out, Niobe's boyfriend. I don't remember your name.
Stack, Stonk. He's Stank. Whatever his fucking name is.
Whatever your name
but
was.
But I agree with you. Morpheus serves up some real shit in this movie. I do love it. And it's amazing that... It's amazing that he portrays it in such a way that's so well done that his character is likable and someone who I admire and respect, because I am not particularly like a religious person, and people who are diehard religious I find upsetting sometimes. And like, this is a character who is a unshakable zealot to the point that like he will kill all of humanity for his beliefs. Like, there is no sacrifice too big for what he believes, which is kind of a horrifying villainous thing, but he sells the shit out of it somehow.
I love the pop he gets when he comes to do the speech. The whole crowd just like erupts like no politician ever would, just like, right. Fucking woo, we love Morpheus, he's so great, look at those arms. But yeah, his belief is, I'm with you on the same page as like, when people are too strongly religious, I am turned off. I'm like, have some free will, have some free thought. Like, you don't believe in fate. Why do you believe in this? But there at least is a logical founding, because he has said that everything the Oracle told him ever has come true.
Right.
So she's batting 1,000. Like, I don't know how many things he told her when he first met her.
Right.
But everything has come true. Trinity fell in love with the one. He found the one. Whatever other things brought him here. He's like, the Oracle has never done me wrong. And not just like, not like when like a psychic is like, oh, you'll walk through a park today, or like you'll breathe air. Like, not those vague ones.
Right.
It seems to be real specific shit.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the Oracle's doing real prophecies.
Yeah, like, you're gonna break that vase, the vase breaks.
Right.
Like, yeah. So the fact that she does, whether, you know, the architect and the Matrix is controlling their lives or not, he has almost undeniable proof the prophecies do come true. And they do. They've come true 6 times, apparently.
Yeah.
So he's at least logical in his beliefs, because he has
Logically illogical.
Yeah, has solid proof that the prophecies actually are real. So it's more understandable. And also, like, he keeps getting proof. Like, you know, in the first movie, it would be a miracle if I didn't kill Neo right now, and then Tank shoots Cypher. It's this really beautiful, like, good build-up execution in the first one.
Right.
And this one, you know, he's like, we have 3 missions and 3 captains, and I don't consider that a coincidence. Like, Morpheus has the only lines that actually resonate with me and make me feel anything in this movie, and it's all about his unshakable beliefs.
Yeah.
And that he's going to save humanity.
And what I like, too, about how they play it, you know, to kind of give a little bit of positive and a little bit of credit to this movie, is that I do like that the people who rail against Morpheus, including Commander Locke is his
That's
name.
Smart.
And you're right, it was Harry Lennix. Like, Locke, when he is railing against Morpheus, Locke is not wrong.
It is
just a different opinion.
This is a real villain was right, you guys.
Absolutely. Locke is making all terrific points and is doing a very sensible job of his job, which is to come up with a practical defense strategy for this city. At no point does he fail his job. At no point is he like, I need to sabotage Morpheus's ship to make an example or prove. He never crosses the line into villainy. He's just like, I am reporting what I think would be practical military decisions to save as many human lives as possible.
And I don't believe in the one.
Yeah. And what I like is that in these moments with Morpheus, Morpheus is unflappable. Locke is not wrong. And just the moments when Locke is like, I don't think you'll survive or succeed. And Morpheus is like, my beliefs don't require you to. And just like these moments between the two of them where Locke is like, fuck, that's a crazy response. Shit, but I have no comeback for it. I came at him with logicality, and he hit me with an illogical thing that is internally coherent. Fuck.
Yeah, Morpheus gave him the old, I don't think about you at all.
Yeah.
From Mad Men.
Like, fuck, that's good. Fuck, that hurts. That's good.
Shit, he doesn't care about me at all. No, I want Morpheus to think about me. I want him to worry about disobeying my commands.
Yeah, so I do like that. I don't really like most of Zion.
I don't understand who this kid is who's following Neo around. What is this? Is this a movie 3 thing?
This is a reference to the Animatrix, the series of anime movies that came out, filling in the timeline between 1 and 2.
Andrew, no.
Yeah.
Andrew.
I know I just said the most early 2000s thing possible.
No, Andrew, no. Yeah. They didn't tie a major character into an animated in between. Where could you watch the animated movie?
It was a DVD. I rented it from Blockbuster.
Of course you did.
You know, of course I did.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a bunch of, they're varying art styles of different shorts. And it's just a kid that Neo is like, hey, we're in the Matrix. And the kid's like, fuck. And then, like, they get the kid out, and then that's it.
And they don't.
And then
explain.
The kid's just, like, super thankful and grateful. Like,
this is 2003's version of fucking Palpatine in Fortnite.
Yes. You know what? It's slightly more artistic because they did at least make short films, but it's not too far off from Palpatine's voice being heard in Fortnite.
I just kept waiting for them to explain who this child was.
Yeah.
Did Tank die in one of those movies? Or did he just die of his wounds?
That is never cleared up.
Boo. Love Tank.
So I loved Tank as a character. That actor might be problematic.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
So this is another, like, a multi-tier allegedly, where according to that actor, Warner Brothers blacklisted him and ruined his career and did a lot of stuff that was, like, very aggressive towards him. But also the actor who plays him has made some, like, hateful and transphobic remarks and is not a great person, it would seem.
Okay.
So it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know who's telling the truth or wrong, or maybe everyone's right and all of you are an asshole, but that is just a character who they have the one throwaway line in this movie where it's like, and Tank died, but there's no explanation anywhere in media. They never bring him up again. He's never recast.
I mean, I will absolutely accept that. Yeah. I am no longer sad about it, actually. Thank you very much. I'll accept he died of his wounds on the Nebuchadnezzar in the first movie. He was shot twice.
Yeah, he was. Later, he was just like, I'm getting sleepy. Oh, he's dead. And you're dead.
Quick scene. And
I'm getting sleepy.
Getting sleepy.
Dead.
I mean, although as much as I like Tank, Harold Perrineau is an upgrade.
Absolutely.
Fucking love him. But you're talking about what you don't like about Zion.
I think, what was I saying before the...
You were talking about what you don't like about Zion. I interrupted to ask about the kid. I'm sorry.
Who cares? But yeah, the kid is a ridiculous thing. It's from a series of animated movies. You got 100% out of that kid that you need to... That the story gives you, which is that it's a kid Neo freed and the kid is a little clingy now. That's it.
All right.
I agree with you. I like Link. I think Harold Perrineau is a phenomenal actor. I think that Link works as a character. I think they overuse him a little bit as the comedic relief, like the constant cut to him in the chair, just kind of alone, being like, he's doing his Superman thing. Wow. Like, there's just too many big reactions that it feels very 90s, even though this movie was early 2000s.
I don't mind that at all, because I was getting so bored. I really needed all of those. There wasn't a single one I'd cut. More, even. I would add more. I'd make these fight scenes shorter.
I do agree with you. With as boring and pedantic as the movie gets, you do need that comedic relief. But it's just a trope that I typically dislike, and it feels a very dated action movie thing. You know, it feels very... in Nolan Batman movies when, like, the tumbler comes out and then it cuts to a cop who's like, I gotta get me one of those. It's like, we didn't need to break up the action to have one comedic line from a guy delivering alone directly to camera. But maybe with how bad the writing is in this, maybe they do need that.
Yeah, I'm not cutting a thing.
But also, it's hard for me to love Harold Perrineau because... Even though he does a great job with Link, and he does a great job with, I believe it was Michael on Lost, I'm like, you burned me twice. And you were part of a rough couple of years for me, my dude.
See, this is what's great about me. I didn't watch Lost past season one, and I didn't see these two movies. So for me, Harold Perrineau is Mercutio in Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. And he was phenomenal. He's like the best part of the movie. So I'm always like, oh, love seeing you in things. You're Mercutio. He's just Mercutio. There's nothing gaslit about him in Romeo and Juliet.
I love to hear that.
Just so you know, he did other things.
I'm happy for him. I'm Mercutio for him. Yeah. I love it.
I love it.
Now, back to Zion.
Back to Zion.
So I agree with you. I like the battle between Locke and Morpheus. I enjoy Link. I don't need all these family elements. Can we talk about the rave scene?
Oh, boy. Give me a second.
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
Because not only did you not see Matrix Reloaded, it seemed, as we watched that scene together, that you also missed all of the cultural jokes making fun of the ridiculous scene from the most popular movie in the world. Because that, I've never, since this movie came out, and then it was in a dark theater, got to see someone's pure, unadulterated, I didn't know this was coming reaction to that scene.
To the rave scene?
Yeah.
Okay, because that's not the worst scene in the movie, obviously.
Oh, it's not the worst, but it is insane. We'll get to the other insane stuff later.
It's not even insane. Like, there is, like, a very, like kind of tribal, like, we're going to celebrate life before we die element that I actually kind of respect in the rave scene. And I get it. Like, you know, we're going to fight for our right to live and we're going to live before we die. I actually don't mind the fact that they have a big rave. Why is it 20 minutes of nothing? Why? I looked at my watch. Like, I forgot to do it, but I actually wanted to go check the timer and see how long this was. And it's so much rave, and it's so much sex with Trinity and Neo.
Yeah.
And they don't coincide in any way. Like, they didn't even make it, like, an artistic, like, as the rave ramps up, the sex ramps up, and then they orgasm when the rave's over. Like, which is, like, I don't need to see that, but it would, like, thematically match why we're watching these two things happen at once.
And it was just a sex scene broken up by random stock footage of a rave.
And, like, feet in the dirt, like, oh, man, Quentin Tarantino loved this scene. He was all over this. Man, he was like, thank you, Wachowskis. Yeah,
and a lot of just like see-through tops and some loose nips.
There's some loose nips, right?
Oh, quite a bit. Yeah, this is an R-rated movie.
Oh, is it rated R?
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't see any of Carrie Ann Moss's boobs.
No, I guess you don't. But yeah, there's just a lot of random nips in that scene. There's quite a few like fucks and cussing later in the movie. So like,
we do go straight up a vag as well.
Yeah, we also go straight up a vag, which weirdly might not be rated R, but we'll unpack that in a minute.
Well, we're gonna get to that.
But yeah, the rave scene I think is just bananas and completely unnecessary, and is like 7 minutes of screen time that can be cut.
It is way too long. I do find it weird that there's like no dissenting people. Like everyone.
Other than Locke, kind
of. Yeah, literally everyone else in Zion was like 100% rave time. No one was like, maybe we should go prepare some ships or like get supplies.
Right.
Like they're coming in 12 hours or 24 hours or something. Like maybe we should be rested before we. No one. And also, where are the kids? There are no children in Zion. I mean, I guess it was like a meeting for adults to find out. Like,
yeah, that's true. There was random like two kids in the scene when Link comes home. Like right. Gina Torres' character has two kids.
Also, Gina Torres having two lines is crazy.
What
is
a waste
she in
of
the
Gina
third
Torres.
One?
I can't even remember.
What a waste of Gina Torres. A tragedy.
Yeah. But yeah, so there are some kids,
okay,
but I guess
so
they're not
the,
at that
all
meeting.
All the dissenters are babysitting.
I guess so. So what bothers me is I agree with you that this is close to something that could in some version of a script work. And it's worked in other fantasy historical pieces and science fiction before where it's like it is the night before you are about to fight to your death. You have a big celebration, a feast, you drink, you party, you have a moment of revelry with your brothers in arms. But typically, in those moments, in other media, whether it be, you know, fantasy or even historical fiction, it is all warriors, people in the army. It is people who are willing to go to their death tomorrow. This seems to be like civilians. Like, this is thousands of people. This is like Biden walking out on the White House lawn. And Biden's like, asteroid coming to Earth. Y'all got 24 hours. And then a drummer just starts. just drumming
and
starts.
Everyone just
and
dances.
Everyone's like, fuck it, I am vibing it to the drums.
No one has taken, and this was the time they found out about the machines coming.
Yeah, they had no idea. This
so
is entirely this is their, new information.
This is their first reaction. Oh, that's a great point. This
and they
is
need
their
no
first
time to process.
Reaction to the fact that they're going to die. No one is like, I got to go write a will. I'm going to leave Zion and like go find a safer place. Mm-hmm. Or they're just like, let's fucking dance.
Let's fucking party. And that is, I think, part of the preparing to fight to your own death thing. That is not 3 seconds after finding out that you were going to fight to your own death.
Totally fair.
And it's not a general public thing. Like, there were people in that crowd who's like, I work small engineering on the water processing facility. Do I have to die too? Like, there are nerds there. Like, they are not all ready to just have a party tonight.
Yeah, there are people who are like, I think this meeting's about taxes or something. I don't know. We'll drop in for a minute. And then it's like an orgy sex dance party.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, guys. Like, I work tomorrow.
Yeah. I think we might be having an impromptu election. Are we doing like a quick vote? Like, I'd vote for Morpheus. I tell you, no matter what Morpheus says, I'm fucking later. I tell you that, though. I am horny. I am a hun. I showed up, and I have no idea. I have literally no clue what is about to be said to me. We are all gathered here today. Anything could be said right now.
Yeah.
And I came in my see-through mesh tank top, and I have no idea what information is about to be said. But regardless of it, I am horny as hell.
Does every Zion meeting end in an orgy? Because everyone showed up ready to orgy.
Yes.
Morpheus did. Mm-hmm. Trinity does. She shows up in that really nice meshy top that shows her belly. Mm-hmm. So everyone came ready to fuck to this council meeting.
They wore their best orgy outfits.
Mm. Now, let me...
I hate this scene so much.
Let me throw down some logic of Zion. Maybe because they are the last of the human race. They're like just constantly like, we gotta make kids.
I can buy into that.
All the time. Every council meeting, gotta make kids.
I could buy into that.
But it's not established.
It's not.
This is just me.
The rest of them need to be hornier more of the time. When Link comes home, his wife is like, I don't want
to
fuck
because
I'm a little huffy. So I don't want to fuck because I'm actually a little upset about your job. But then later, when someone's like, the doom is coming, we have 24 hours, then his wife, I guess, is like, I actually am a little horny now that I think about
it. Now that I think about it, now that I've been to the hot council meeting.
Yeah, so choosing the wrong job with not enough time off work, not horny.
Not horny.
Finding out that the world's about to end, horny.
Horny.
Yeah. So.
All right. So we got sexy council meeting orgies. Let's go into a positive for a sec, because even though this movie is bland, as I said, the action is good, though there's no stakes. But like the fight with all the Agent Smiths is incredible. Like there is just no denying how awesome this is. Like from a choreography standpoint of making a believable choreography of one man fighting 100 men that I believe.
Yeah.
And like that I'm like, yeah, he's blocking that, he's hitting that, he's blocking that, he's hitting that. Like that is an achievement of choreography.
I do think that fight sequence is brilliant. The fight sequence gets a lot of hate due to the weird rubbery CGI in the middle, which I obviously we could do without and doesn't work.
It turns into a video game for like 5 seconds and then it doesn't and then it doesn't and then it doesn't.
And frankly, if you just like cut the video game moment out of the fight, I think then it's a great fight. I think the weird rubbery video game stuff downgrades it to a good fight, but if that were edited out, it's great. I agree with you. I really like it.
Yeah, it's got so much happening in terms of just like, oh my God, I don't know why we're impressed that Keanu learns all this John Wick choreography, because he had to learn so much choreography for this movie.
Yeah.
He has 3 giant fight scenes.
And completely different fighting styles and using different weapons as well in this movie.
One-on-one weapon fighting, one-on-100, then him with a big staff. And so what I love about this fight is it's like, yeah, there is the CG elements, but when it cuts to the real stuff, it's so much better. Like, they should cut the CG elements. Like, it goes from him doing, like, the run CG style in the circle, but then he's like, it's just Keanu holding the bar and does like three flips. And I'm like, that looked so much cooler and better. And I loved it. And like, it's Keanu. And then you can kind of tell when it's a stunt double.
Yeah.
But, and also like all the Agent Smith faces look awesome.
They look awesome.
They're flawless.
And even when they don't, I'm on board with it. I do spend a lot of time looking at the background.
To try to spot the non-fixed ones.
And frankly, there are a considerable amount of Agent Smiths that are stunt doubles who happen to look slightly similar to Hugo Weaving. Then there are a few that don't, that they just didn't finish CGIing Hugo Weaving's face onto. There's a few where it's janky, but it's so weird to say about, like, The Matrix, one of the most expensive film franchises in the world. There is almost a charm to some of the jankiness to the Agent Smith fight, where I'm just like, yeah, you don't have 100 Hugo Weavings. I don't fucking care that that's a stunt dude who looks slightly like Hugo Weaving, but not that much like Hugo Weaving. I don't care. This is awesome. And then on top of that, I know you don't notice music, but that fucking song. The fight sequence is called The Burly Brawl, and the song called Burly Brawl is, I think, one of the best pieces of music in the whole Matrix franchise. As more Agent Smiths are piling out of doorways, and it's becoming almost comical how many, the speed up in the music, that like, the constant ramp up of speed, it feels so frenetic. And there are points where just the music alone, I'm like, oh my God, that's too many Smiths. Like, just listening to it, it sounds like it's too many of them.
It kind of stresses you out like the Sonic Underwater music.
It
like,
is it's like, very similar in its energy.
This music is stressing me out. There's too many. We got to fly away. We got to just get the fuck out of here. Yeah, Neo just like having to like bounce. I also really love how sad the Agent Smiths look that they can't fly.
Like, it is. They were pouty. They were very pouty.
That was not like normally a movie like that would be like, we'll get him next time. Or like, they would look kind of smug, like, we got him. He ran away. But these Agent Smiths just look like, oh, we can't fly.
We can do a lot, but we can't.
We can't fly.
Can't fly, but we can do a lot.
We can do a lot, but we can't. And they just kind of leave all in a little huff after having like one of the best fight scenes of all time.
And I think another good scene with the Oracle, kind of leading up to that moment.
She's great. She says nothing. She says more than anyone else in this movie, but...
Well, what I think is that this scene with the Oracle works if the rest of the movie wasn't trash.
Yeah, okay.
I feel like the performance and writing of the Oracle in this scene is as good as the performance and writing of the Oracle in the first Matrix movie, which is impeccable. But in the first movie, she is the only character that is as poetic and verbose and hypothetical. She is the only character who's like, oh, what's really going to bake your bean later is if you still would have done it if I hadn't said anything. But in this movie, everyone talks like that.
Yeah.
So it's meaningless now.
What is choice? Yeah, maybe we need machines. Machines need us.
We'll make fun of the Merovingian in a bit, but the Merovingian just being like, oh, choice, action, reaction. What is action? Action could only be a thing that is the thing that you choose to do, but you didn't choose to do it because the action is simply a reaction of its own kind. It's like, shut up. No one cares. But if the Oracle was the only character who talked like that, and the Merovingian didn't, and the architect didn't, and if everyone else who talks in bullshit prophetic
philosophy 101,
philosophy, poetry, if they all shut up, this scene really works.
I get what you're saying, because there is like sneaky truths that you don't want to listen to. Like she says, like, I am a program, and like you have to choose whether to believe me or not or trust me or not. And then if you believe the architect, it's like, yeah, she did lead you astray.
Yeah.
I don't know if you shouldn't have listened to her because she told you where the Keymaster is. It got you here. It got you the information you needed. But she is just working for the machine.
Right.
She's part of the process. And she is not shying away from that. But we as viewers want to believe in her as much as Morpheus does. We're like, no, she's on our side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We can't, even if she says that, obviously she wouldn't tell us that if she wasn't on our side.
And I honestly don't necessarily believe that she has a side as much as she is conveying neutral information. And that is simply part of the process. And she even kind of like references crows and the wind and the air. And she's like, when a program functions, you don't question it. And he's not questioning her because she is serving her function. Mm. So I think that's actually like an intelligently written scene to be like, I am the same as the crows and the wind and the rotation of the earth. I seem like I am a rebel or a badass, but in reality, this is a character that is serving a very meticulous function, and it's doing its job so well, Neo is not questioning what what its intention is.
Yeah, that's a good point. So yeah, maybe on her own she works. She's surrounded by so much bullshit that you like she just seems like more bullshit. But yeah, if it was just her philosophizing, it might have a little bit more impact.
It might have a little bit. Mm-hmm.
And to go back around to positives that I was like, kind of, I was gonna segue into next. The phasing of do the white twins have a name? The albino twins? What are they?
I think just the twins.
Just the twins?
I think okay. They're, yeah, the twins.
The phasing of the twins technology is crazy cool. It's really fun. It's a cool idea. It's weird that they're not agents. They seem more powerful than Agent Smith.
Well, they used to be agents.
Oh, they used to be agents.
Well, that's the implication.
Well, like, I don't know, like, some of the programs are like keys and oracles, so I didn't know that they were agents.
Okay. I can't say definitively that they were agents.
Okay.
But the lore implication, and this is something that I do actually really enjoy about this movie, and I'm like, this could have been a fun thing you build on, but the implication is that, and I think it's Monica Bellucci's character who breaks it down, but it's like all of the myths and legends were programs that worked for the system that they then upgraded and outlived their purchase, their purpose, much like Agent Smith has.
Yeah, they glitched.
They glitched like Agent Smith, and then new agents had to come into play. So I think the implication is that like vampires, werewolves, ghosts were an agent at some point. I think the Keymaster is something different, but I think vampires, werewolves, ghosts are like, we used that to attack problems, but then it raised too many questions, so we deleted those programs.
Okay, all right, so they were agents, but then they're really cool. Because like the vampires don't seem particularly vampiric, other than the fact that they're watching vampire movies.
Yeah.
But the ghosts are ghosts, and it's a really cool use of like how they're phasing in and out and how they're going to fight. And like if you want to get the knife off Trinity's neck, you have to make them phase out so that she can escape. Like really cool uses of what they can do. I know it's in every trailer, so it was the reason I saw it. The shot where he just stands and sits back into the car.
Yeah.
That's crazy cool. That's awesome.
I love it. Yeah.
So these guys are like, these guys I actually think are more impressive than the Agent Smith fight to me, or at least more fun maybe.
I do agree that
they're
it
fun
is,
in a different way.
I do agree that it is fun. Yeah, it is fun, and it is that classic kind of like Jackie Chan thing where it's like, having an incorporeal being, they use it in a clever way. They use it as a fight modifier, the same way that like when you watch a Jackie Chan movie, it's like, he's in a cast. How is that going to affect the fight? Mm-hmm. He's on a ladder. How is that going to affect the fight? The incorporeal thing of like, yeah, like they've got the knife to the throat, so I need to shoot them to make him incorporeal for Trinity to get out. And just these little modifiers that they add where it's not just like, oh no, they're invisible. That's no good. It is, how do I affect that in an interesting way?
Yeah, it almost felt like when you like are playing a video game and you're like, ooh, I got to figure out the mechanics of fighting these guys. Like, it's not the same as fighting an agent. There are way different things to consider here. And like the way Morpheus kills them is badass.
The samurai slice with the explosion is nice.
Another thing that I like is that Morpheus and Trinity both get extensive fights in this. Even if they're too long and they're a little boring and they're like monotony, they both get to be badasses without Neo there, which is cool because he's like mega overpowered. So
yes, absolutely. And I do think the like, we have keys that teleport you around the globe is a clever way of separating Neo from the group as well. A little bit forced, but it is clever in its own regard.
I think it's not forced in that we keep using that trope throughout the film. Like, the Keymaster does that all the time, like, to get to the source, to do this. It's kind of the whole thing that the Merovingians?
Merovingian
does, is like his doors open to weird places. Like Monica Bellucci does it just to get around.
Right.
So it didn't feel forced to me. It felt like clever, get rid of Neo. It's kind of what we always say about like the only way to beat the Avengers is to portal the Hulk away.
Right, first thing you gotta do.
You can't beat the Hulk. Yeah. You just gotta portal him away.
Neo is the Hulk in this scenario.
Neo is absolutely the Hulk.
You gotta portal him out of there right away.
You gotta get him out of there. So it's nice to see. And so, yeah, the twins were great. The fight was great. And Morpheus and Trinity fighting was fun.
Shall we dunk on the Merovingian?
Oh, my God.
This fucking guy.
What the fuck? I wasn't like this movie is terrible until that scene. And I gave that scene a minute to get bad. I'm like watching the scene, and I'm watching the scene. And when the cake vagina orgasm happened and I turned to you, how long had you been looking at me?
The whole time. The whole time.
Because you were looking straight at me when I turned around to you.
The second that he was like, take a look at this woman. This woman. She's beautiful. Everyone look at her. Everyone stare at her. She knows. And as soon as he starts mentioning the woman, I'm burning holes in the side of your head just watching how you're going to react to this.
How have I not heard about the orgasm cake scene that shoots straight up the vagina?
He programmed a code for a cake that shoots into her vagina.
And makes her orgasm, I assume.
That is the implication, okay. For sure.
Least like made her like horny and then they went and had sex in the bathroom? Because he cheated on Monica Bellucci.
Ah, interesting. He did.
In the women's washroom.
I had never really thought that she was the one that he was cheating on Monica Bellucci with.
Well, I mean, like, if she's horny but didn't just orgasm.
Maybe?
That's why he, like, leaves immediately?
He does leave then. Yeah, no, this makes sense. I'd never thought about it. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just never thought about it.
I solved the Matrix Reloaded, guys.
Yeah, and we fixed it. Well, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
With Racist Evolution.
We need to...
But this was just the wildest, like, When Harry Met Sally parody of the cake that makes you orgasm. Like, and then for these, like, wildly progressive directors to have a shot that digitally goes up a woman's skirt.
Yes. And inside her.
Yeah, in a non-consensual way. Like, sex scenes with Neo and Trinity, I'm like, whatever, they love each other, having sex, they're two consenting adults. But this is invasive, and I don't like it.
And in fact, and this, you know, this is a bit much, but, like, it makes the ending of the movie weird. Because... Well, in the ending of the movie, when, like, they show Neo go inside Trinity's chest and take a bullet out and squeeze her heart, and I'm like, I guess, but the last time we've done these visuals, it was to show a woman goosh, and it also feels, now you've made this weird ending between two characters who do love each other, feel weirdly horny and non-consensual.
And connected to the...
Because the last time the camera went inside the coat of a body, it was just to show a wet orgasm. Mm. So you've really grossed out what should be your emotional payoff at the end by using this effect only twice. And once was to be horny. And the other was to show the strength of actual emotional love.
Yeah, because the only other time we see inside a person is when he looks at Seraph, but Seraph doesn't look like code. He looks like gold.
And even then, we don't go inside of him.
Yeah. We just Matrix view the whole room.
Seraph, another nothing character that doesn't need to be there anyway.
He has a fun enough fight scene, but he doesn't do anything.
Absolutely. It's fun enough. That's exactly the right way to describe
it. It's like, this movie's so long. Why are you here?
Yeah. Apparently, like...
And right before another better fight scene.
Reportedly or supposedly, that scene was written because they were going, like, it was going to be, like, Jet Li was going to play the part.
I almost was like, am I not looking at Jet Li right? Is this Jet Li? Like, why else is this scene here?
So, two roles in this movie were written for stunt casting, and then they didn't get them, and they kept the scenes in for some reason.
How could the Matrix not get a stunt casting?
Right? So, reportedly, Jet Li was supposed to be the guardian of the Oracle, who they have that fight scene with. And the final actor does a good job in that fight sequence, but it's an irrelevant character. And even if they did get Jet Li, still, who gives a shit? It's a nothing character. You need to have meaning in the script to write anyone in. But also, the architect was supposed to be Sean Connery, famously.
That would have sucked.
Yeah.
He couldn't deliver those lines.
Oh, no, there's no way at all.
Not 2003 Sean Connery? Mm-hmm. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen's Sean Connery?
Well, famously, we talked, I think, about it on our League episode. That was the reason he took League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, yeah, because he passed on Matrix and Lord of the Rings.
And he was like, I didn't understand either. But for Lord of the Rings, he should have understood Lord of the Rings. For the Matrix, if they sent him that scene, you are right, Sean. There is nothing to understand.
You know what? He leaves out that he turned down The Matrix 2. Because he says it like he turned down The Matrix.
The Matrix, yeah.
And he didn't turn down The Matrix.
He turned down The Matrix 2.
He rightfully turned down Matrix 2.
Yeah. But stunt casting, two characters that could be deleted, don't need to be there. They didn't happen. It's the architect and the guardian of the Oracle. But back to the Merovingian and his orgasmic cake. And Monica Bellucci as a woman who exists in a scene and has no lines for a while and then is like, I'm mad my boyfriend's cheating and you're both immortal computer programs.
And also, I want to be kissed in front of your girlfriend. I got weird kinks.
That scene is miserable as well.
They both have weird kinks. Like, I get why this couple is together. He wants to make women orgasm with cake. She wants to be kissed by a dude in front of her, in front of his girlfriend, like real voyeuristically. Like, they are both going through some shit.
And I cannot emphasize this enough. They are computer programs. I cannot emphasize it enough.
Could you emphasize it one more time?
They are computer programs.
They're computer programs who are
they
horny
do not have
and
the,
cheat on each
yeah,
other.
Yeah, you know the computer programs that get horny and cheat on each other?
Classic.
An unbelievable waste of time that is miserable in the middle of this movie. It's frankly, like, it's unwatchable. If I weren't watching it for the podcast, like, I wanted to pull my own hair out. I would fast forward it, and I usually do if I rewatch Matrix Reloaded. The second the Merovingian shows up, I'm like, fast forward until they're fighting in that the vampires in the stairwell.
Totally.
Nothing in between happens.
Fair. Because he also has nothing to say. Like, did you know that causes make effect? And I'm like, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, you give a woman an orgasm cake, she's going to orgasm. What are you talking about?
When he's just like, I love French curses. And he just says a bunch of French curses. And then there's like just an awkward silence, like this man shit himself. I'm like, well, that was a nothing line of dialogue. It has no consequence on anything. Why are you talking, dude?
So there's nothing to say. He has an awkward cake orgasm, and then she makes Neo cheat on his girlfriend right in front of her. Mm. And that is their character arc. But I have to say something about these characters, and this is going to sound wild. They are, in a way, the most fleshed out characters in the film. I believe these characters exist. Whoa. Outside of this scene.
Whoa, that's sad, but you're kind. I can't argue this too much.
There is no other character who I think exists when we stop interacting with them, who has like a life outside of Neo and Morpheus. Like, the Oracle does nothing right on her own. The agents do nothing on their own. I don't think anyone in Zion is up to anything except maybe Link. When I meet these two and they're like having a battle of like, I'm cheating on you by helping Neo and you're cheating on me by going to the bathroom with this lady, I'm like, these two exist. They're real full-fleshed people.
They're trash people who I don't want to exist,
no, but
they exist and they continue to.
They have lives and personalities that no one else in this film has.
They have a favorite restaurant and a wine and fights, but they get back together. They have a house. They have, yeah, you're right.
And it's
wow.
Weird.
Whoa.
As much as they
mind.
Suck, they're full of characters who I think exist beyond the movie and keep having fights and getting back together and affecting change.
I hate the writing of this fucking movie so much. So much do I hate the writing of this movie.
They feel more like people than anyone else in the film.
Oh, God, I hate the writing of this fucking movie.
So that's my... I've only seen this once, but that's my take on the Merovingian.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah,
you got it. It's a great take. It's excellent. A great take on this trash man who's made of trash. God damn, orgasm cake. I hate the orgasm cake so much. Why? Why are we doing this?
Some wild swings.
Yeah, it's some wild swings. I like the stairwell monster fight with Neo. I think that's fun, like stopping the bullets and stuff like that. And also, Merovingian and his, those two trash people get away, which I also hate. But the stairway fight with the other monsters, I like that sequence. It's a great fight scene.
Oh, the monsters, because they're all vampires, I guess.
I think
they seem
all,
like they're human.
They're something-ish.
I guess you're supposed to kill them with silver, although he doesn't.
I don't think they're
Monica
all vampires.
Belushi does.
I think the implication is like
there are
one.
Many things?
Yeah, because like it's like there's ghosts, there's vampires, there are other shit as well. I don't know. One's a chupacabra. I don't know.
I don't know what they are. But yeah, it's that is a very fun fight as well. Yeah, it doesn't feel very Neo to just split up. I will say that much. Like, and in the end, I don't mind because I like them getting their own fight scene later. But it felt very unlike him to like just not stay together when he knows how powerful he is and that he could protect them better than they could protect the Keymaster. But yeah, the fight scene itself is great. Like, it's like little things, like when he leaps up and he lands on the railing instead of the ground, and he just like looks really solid.
Yeah.
Where it could look really flimsy because he's on a wire. Like, yeah, just little things really made that whole sequence really pop.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I had a good time with that.
That sequence pops. The highway sequence, I think, kind of pops. Like, I don't love the highway sequence as much as all of the other fight sequences in this movie. It was the most expensive and biggest thing this movie did, and I don't think it's the most impressive thing in this movie.
I think it's kind of not the most impressive in that it's like the most straightforward action sequence. Like, other than the ghost boys going back into their car, it doesn't do anything groundbreaking. Like, it's the same fight scene that like a Fast and Furious would have.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a car chase scene. So it's not like we did anything particularly Matrixy with it. I do think Morpheus blowing up the ghosts is like great.
Yeah.
But other than that, like no part makes you go, whoa, oh my God, I can't believe they did that. I think because you're in the Matrix, kind of, you can't really have a car chase scene because every car that explodes, you're like, well, those are just virtual people. Like, when cars blow up and you're like, you're not worried about civilians. You're not like, oh my God, that fruit stand owner, what's he gonna do?
There's always a fruit stand owner.
You know what I mean?
No, I agree. There is always a fruit stand owner.
Because that's a virtual person, so they're going to be fine. Like, it's a real person in a tube somewhere, but their virtual self is fine.
Right.
So, yeah, there's kind of like no stakes involved. And, like, nothing particularly interesting happening. But it's, like, well done also at the same time.
Yeah, it is.
It's a weird balance.
It's well executed, and it's visibly expensive, but it's not the most tense thing in the movie.
And it also doesn't even follow the logic of why they're on the freeway, because they never get to a phone. They just stay in the Matrix. Because the Keymaster can't leave the Matrix. They just go to another building.
Huh.
They never get to a phone, babe.
You're right. Because they are going, that is the purpose. They are going to an exit.
Yeah, they're
Link
going.
Link is like, I'm sending you to an exit.
Yeah, to an exit. And I thought it was going to be like a construction site on the freeway has a phone or something.
Right.
Like, he was like, you have to take the freeway. And then they just stay in the Matrix because Neo flies them away.
Yeah, and also you wouldn't be able to get the Keymaster.
The Keymaster can't leave. He's a program.
Yeah,
there was
apparently they can, but that's a whole, we'll get.
Ooh, what's going to happen?
Oh, I mean Agent Smith. Yeah, okay.
Well, yeah, he would have had to inhibit someone's body then, but I don't think that's his program.
Yeah, Keymaster can't do that.
So yeah, they never get to a phone.
Hmm.
So the whole point was nothing.
I hate the fucking writing of this movie so much. I never thought about that. Or if I had, I forgot. But yeah, I hate the writing.
Hate
the writing of this movie so much.
I'm sorry.
There's some visual stuff that works. There's some concepts that are fun. I like that there's vampires and ghosts.
What about, I mean, I'm getting to the end of me, but I have to ask, what about the architect?
What about the architect?
Do you think there have been 5 Neos?
Okay, so this is something that I think is...
Or is the computer lying?
Similar to the Matrix having vampires, werewolves, and ghosts,
mm-hmm.
I think that this is incredibly insightful and fun in premise and wildly boring and upsetting in execution.
Okay.
But I do like the idea of what the architect represents. I like the idea that rebellion is manufactured. And I think that is an interesting theme for this movie, where it's like counterculture is planned by culture as a whole, and we are marketing and selling you the rebellion that you're buying into. You're not actually rebelling against us. You're buying a product.
We control the rebellion.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that was also almost kind of like a meta commentary on like the effect that the original Matrix had on society as well, where it was like, there were so many, like, air quote, rebellious kind of goth types who were like now wearing the sunglasses and jackets of the first Matrix movie. But it was like, you bought a mass-produced slave labor PVC, not actual leather jacket to be like, I'm cool and rebellious. But it's like, you were just sold a thing by a mass corporation. Like, they are manufacturing the literal cultural identity of rebellion that you are buying into, which is true of a lot of things in rebellious society as a whole.
Yeah, but you're not rebelling if you're becoming part of the largest movie franchise of all time.
You're not
into some indie idea that no one else has bought into. Like, we all like The Matrix.
Yeah.
no one is fighting you on this.
Yeah. Absolutely. It feels very similar to like the movement of people who are like, I don't like IKEA things because the movie Fight Club told me to and I misunderstood the film. It's like, okay, all right. Buying into an idea of counterculture is not counterculture, mm-hmm. and it is just consumerism in a, frankly, more aggressive form. But I think that there is a very interesting theme to be explored with The Architect that they explore it in the most verbose, annoying conversation and dialogue possible. I don't know if Neo is the sixth, but it kind of makes sense.
I think it doesn't. I get what you're saying about premise, but like in another movie, it could work. I don't think it could ever work in this because I just don't believe that the machines would ever wipe out all of humanity and then be like, now 37 of you go make Zion again. Why would that be a thing they would want to do? Because they're like, Neo, you can take 16 people and restart Zion.
Right.
Why would they ever keep recreating Zion? It serves no purpose other than the 0.01% that want to rebel out of the Matrix. Just kill that 0.01%.
So from the incredibly verbose and impossible to understand dialogue that The Architect gives, which I had heard and analyzed way too many times.
Of course, I'm actually genuinely interested.
So the concept is that 0.1% or however much it might be, they are corrupted files, mm-hmm. and they will always exist as a minority. But if you don't give them something to do, they corrupt the entire computer system. So it's literally like the Matrix does not exist if you don't give the rebellious percentage, if you don't give people an option to leave. That like we cannot eliminate free will and choice completely. We have to give you the option to leave. And the majority of people are ciphers. Like 99.9% of the world is cipher. But they never actually like get out and come back in. They just don't. They don't want to go and they don't want to know. But if we don't give you that option, it corrupts the whole system and our computer crashes and we lose all of our batteries anyway.
Oh,
so it is
okay.
This idea that like we have two, we the computers have two options. Complete system failure or manufacturing an outlet for the problem programs to go to, and then that will allow us to run smoothly.
Okay. I mean, that, okay, I get that. It still doesn't explain why they just don't kill them as soon as they log out.
Yeah, killing should also be an option.
Yeah, like as soon as Neo woke up in that little womb, he should have just been killed.
Yeah, they could just be like, yeah, you always have the option to leave. And then you leave and it's
and
like,
bang.
And then
you just get a bullet in the head.
Bang, because you're dead now.
Because we control the world.
Right.
Yeah. Zion doesn't seem to serve a purpose.
That also makes sense.
Because they can control, yes, they can control everything that happens to you in the Matrix. They have no control over Zion. It doesn't, there's no like, we're inside your machines in Zion. Don't you know, like, because that would be interesting, like the counselor was saying. Like, we're run by machines down here.
Right.
And if secretly the Matrix was in those machines, that would be fucking interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But unless that's the twist of three, they're not.
Well, so, yeah, there's a lot that's a mess there. Mm. I agree.
But I will say one positive of the Architect scene, which is boring and it's too much exposition.
Vis-a-vis, ergo, concurrently, if you consider accordingly what vis-a-vis I ergo go to.
Wow.
Then
you nailed the Architect.
Like, what are you fucking saying?
The only thing I like is all the stuff with the Neos and the screens is really cool.
I don't mind that.
The five previous Neo reactions going in and out of the screen. Like, it's really artistic. It's really cool. For a scene that doesn't work, it's nifty.
Now, I will say one thing that I've not seen a definitive answer of. I am not sure if what's on the screen is supposed to be previous iterations of Neo's reactions, or if it is supposed to be the embodiment of the program trying to predict choice.
Ooh.
Because they have the line with the architect where he's just like, but the problem has always been the same thing. Choice. We can never eliminate choice. And Neo says, bullshit. And all versions of him says bullshit. And the architect's like, but we can predict what's likely. So I think I'm not sure if it's meant to be previous iterations of him or if it is meant to be the representation of an algorithm trying to predict multiple possible outcomes of the current situation that they're in.
Interesting. Either way, it's cool. But I took it as Neo just because, and I haven't seen it a million times, so I could be very wrong. I took it as previous iterations just because he says, you got that faster than the others, and the others are a little second behind.
Okay.
So it does feel like just recordings of the previous Neos.
Interesting. Okay.
But that is all I have to go on.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm. But yeah, okay. So, it's such an exposition dump. Oh, my God.
It's
of
huge.
Nothingness.
And, like, I'm not... I don't even know if I want to shit on that actor because I'm like, it's terrible dialogue. It's hard to deal with, but it's not being elevated in any way. I think that the scenes with the architect and the Merovingian and a lot of these scenes in this movie, it is the absolute polar opposite of a lot of the compliments we gave to The Matrix last week on the podcast. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Whereas last week, most of the compliments boiled down to the movie, the first Matrix movie, being so concise and so efficient, and every line of dialogue, even if it's a little poetic, serves 2 to 3 different functions. It propels the story forward. It gives you exposition. It also unlocks a little bit of understanding and interpretation of a character.
Do you think that's air you're breathing? Is 3 levels of writing?
Absolutely. Whereas there's not a single line of dialogue in this movie that has it. This movie is so, the dialogue is so indulgent and bloated and verbose, and it says the most possible while saying the least possible in its meaning. And that is really bland and boring, and it feels like the actual opposite interpretation of how to tell this story as the first one had.
Yeah, it's very rambling, no concise thesis statement. It's every monologue is just like, I've said this thing about choice. Let me say it again with different words. And I'm like, I'd rather you didn't. And like, what if cause had effect? And what if effect had cause? But I'm saying it with a French accent. It's just so much nothing. This movie is the equivalent of Inspector when Blofeld is like, I was controlling your whole life. I'm like, what? That's
Were
not
you?
Anything.
I guess.
You controlled all our lives. Why? But like, I live outside of the Matrix now.
So you don't.
I have a life.
I had a rave orgy last night.
Did you control the
you
rave orgy?
You had no ability of predicting the rave orgy.
And then, like, I would love the architect to be like, you guys had a rave orgy?
Yeah. Someone told us, a political leader told us we were all going to die, and everyone got horny. You do not control us, sir.
I'm not going to lie to you, Neo. I did not know that or expect that. I don't have a program for rave orgy after hearing
his
about
robot head pops off, sparks start coming
scanners
out.
Scanners ending.
Absolutely.
That's it's, how we beat him.
I would love that to be the final scene of it all.
We beat the source via our orgy council meetings.
Yeah, that's definitely going to have a big impact on it.
Excellent. That's my change.
There we go.
No, that's how we did it. Neo is just like, so you controlled the orgy rave where 50,000 people all had sex together. He's like, wait, what? What do you guys do in Zion?
You did what? What?
We did it.
The last thing we got to talk about real quick before we go in for the close is we never talked about the I guess, main villain of this movie. The fact that Agent Smith leaves the Matrix and is in reality now. The fact that that is such a soft storyline, we haven't brought it up yet, is bananas, but it's the last thing we should bring up, which is the fact that Agent Smith can duplicate himself in this movie, which kind of is like a fun premise and I'm on board with and it makes sense, but he duplicates himself over a human and gets into reality. And for as much verbose exposition that this movie lays down, there is not a single line of even attempted sci-fi bullshit to get the audience on board with what is happening in any way.
I actually have no problem with the logic or science behind a program can put himself into your brain. Like, there's, like, obviously computer stuff in there if you're logging into the Matrix. That I absolutely have no problem with. But you're absolutely right. This movie that is so long-winded and loves to explain things, giving no explanation, no motivation, no discussion of, like, oh, no, you're acting weird. Maybe you're not you. Like, why did you cut two lines into your hand? What did that possibly mean? Agent Smith has never done that. It's not anything. The fact that nothing about this is anything. And then the reveal, the cliffhanger reveal is this guy who might be Agent Smith and you don't even remember his face. You haven't seen this character in an hour.
Set off an EMP to sabotage Zion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is crazy.
It's insane. Yeah, haven't seen him in an hour. We had one scene with him in reality, like, and that's such an interesting premise as well. Like, you could explore Agent Smith in a human's body. He's never felt or experienced human things. Like, maybe he's cutting his hand because he's like, I've actually never felt pain before. Like, this is an entirely new and exotic experience to him. But we have no exploration of that. And frankly, I keep forgetting this actor's face.
It's such a forgettable face.
It's so forgettable.
They chose a real, like, nothing of a man. No offense to whoever you are.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, not doing a great Hugo Weaving. Not doing Hugo Weaving, but...
But also Hugo Weaving would be like, I'm not Hugo Weaving.
Yeah.
Mr. Anderson.
We should see if Mr. Anderson, I mean Neo, would like our help on the ship.
Hello, my friend Neo.
Oh,
my pal.
Yeah, a very strange thing to be like, Agent Smith is in the real world. And Neo can also control the real world.
This is two different movies. Like, this is a computer leaving into the real world via a human body is a separate movie. That, and, like, I don't mean, like, a fifth Matrix movie. I mean, that's a different sci-fi premise. Because the Matrix movies are humans go into sci-fi, mm-hmm. into the virtual world. And to just tack on that, oh, by the way, they can also do this. I'm like, that entire exploration. And for a movie that is, for a series franchise that is all about, like, philosophy. Like, what is humanity? What is the mind? What is the body? What creates a soul? Like where is the disconnect? What is choice? For this movie to have no interest in analyzing what it means for a robot to become human is crazy. Like, that is an entire film of exploration. Like, he has to learn hunger. Like, he talks about how he hates being in the human world in the first movie.
He doesn't like being in the Matrix because he can smell. And yeah. Now he's a human man.
That's huge!
He's going to have to poop today.
What? His first poop? It's going to be crazy.
He hates the smell of the computer.
He's not going to like the real world. Zion probably... reeks. No offense, Zion.
Yeah, but it
definitely
reeks.
You're an impromptu underground society.
Yeah, yeah. That air is going nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the lack of exploration of this is wild and very tacked on and a very different sci-fi premise. If it was like the whole point of the movie, if this was we're fighting Agent Smith in reality and we don't have cool kung fu powers now, that's actually kind of interesting.
Right.
Because in reality, would you still have your cool kung fu powers?
It's a great question, right?
Like, you wouldn't be able to jump off the wall, but do you still know all the kung fu?
Well, the other...
As much as your body can do it.
The other thing, too, so we're going to have an interesting ride going on over Revolutions on the Patreon, because there were so many theories about Reloaded when this came out. Like, when I was, like, obsessing over what does it mean, I needed it to mean something.
It's got to mean something.
A consensus myself and other people on forums had at the time about this movie was... I mean, we wouldn't have used this terminology because this film didn't exist yet, but it was Inception. So, like, the interpretation that I walked away from this film with was that what we have as an audience been told is the real world is actually a second level of a computer simulation, which is why a computer program is able to jump levels and why Neo is still able to use force powers to control machines. This is a second layer of a simulation, and that also would explain why the architect allows Neo to choose 16 and create a new Zion, is that in order to control the dissonance, they have actually created a second, air quote, real world, which is the world that they just put rebels in, which is a in itself a level of control, which is we give the rebellious people somewhere to go, and that will control them. That was the interpretation that I was super behind after leaving the theater of this movie. Which
not gonna lie,
would have been all right.
Not gonna lie, I thought about it.
You thought about it
for a second while watching this. But here's the thing: might be the only reason I thought about it. When I searched Matrix on Netflix, it was Matrix Reloaded, Matrix Revolutions. The very next option, Inception. So Netflix
knows.
Netflix was
in on it. There's some algorithm there.
Netflix was in on it. Might be Inception.
Interesting.
It might be two layers of dreams.
All right. Well, let's go in for the close, shall we? Let's ask the final question of what would you change? So now that we've discussed everything we discussed, what would you change about this podcast if you could change anything?
About this podcast.
About this podcast. About this movie on this podcast.
I don't have any changes
I'm
for
sundowning.
Our podcast.
Don't even worry about it.
No, he's done, guys. This is it.
I'm
this
done.
This is the end of Talk from Superheroes.
Before we ask the final question of what would you change, we want to thank our other sponsor of today's episode. It's our friends over at NordVPN.
NordVPN, Swiss Army knife for your computer.
Tell me about them.
It's going to protect you. Mm-hmm. You're on like a Wi-Fi network you haven't used before, something public, something at the airport.
Oh,
the
library. This sounds dangerous.
But don't you worry. You've got NordVPN. You turn it on with one click, and now no one's hacking your info. No one's checking your files. No one's doing your air, Mac. I don't know what that is, an AirDrop, a Mac drop, whatever that is.
Sure.
I see some people tweet about it sometimes.
Interesting.
Seems fun. But I don't think they can get to it with your NordVPN. You are protected.
Diana uses Android and Windows. I don't know if you could tell by that panic in her voice.
Could you tell? Why did I bring up a Mac product?
You shouldn't have done it.
Because
but the great thing,
NordVPN works on Windows and Mac products.
Yeah, Windows, Mac, Android. That's the great thing about NordVPN. It's going to work across multiple devices. It is going to hide your device's internet location, which will provide additional security for you. It'll help protect your privacy. It also will occasionally allow you to access perhaps regionally locked content that you might not be able to view or access in the area of the world that you're in. We're in Canada, so every now and then we got to flick that thing on to be like, hey, we're in the U.S., let us see U.S. things. And then because we have NordVPN, American websites are like, yeah, sure, totally, come on in. And I'm like,
you're an American.
Ha ha ha, NordVPN, gotcha.
NordVPN, and it works for 59 different countries. It's so easy. It's one click change. It sounds like a complicated process, but Nord did the complicated stuff.
They
and
did
then
it all.
Just gave you a button to click.
It's really just like, it's just a button to click, you guys.
It's
so easy.
It's so absolutely easy. You can use one account on six different devices, and it's the fastest VPN in the world.
So go to nordvpn.com/TFS. Or use promo code TFS to get a 2-year plan plus a bonus gift with a huge discount. So once again, nordvpn.com/TFS, promo code TFS. You get a 2-year plan plus a bonus gift with a huge discount. And thank you, NordVPN, for your support.
Thank you, Nord.
And as well, the other two things that we mention every week that we'll remind you of right now, support the podcast, rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your thing. Helps us move up the charts. Helps us find new listeners. You know what it does.
You know what it does. Go to Podcast Addict. Go to Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. We're going to read it. We're going to be so happy. Other people are going to read it, and they'll be happy, and they'll listen to our podcast. Everybody wins.
Simple. Makes a difference. Free thing to do. But if you do want to support the podcast monetarily, you can do that over on Patreon.
You can go to patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. Patreon is a place where creators create extra content for people who love them. So if you have a few dollars in the budget, you can go to Patreon and get extra stuff from the From Superheroes Network.
Like our episode on Matrix Revolutions, which will be available right now. So as soon as you finish this episode, if you want to keep that party going, you can become a hero-level patron over on our Patreon page and listen to the exclusive episode on Matrix Revolutions. And that'll be over there. And also, when you sign up at the hero level, you get immediate access to the whole back catalog. There's also no obligation, so you can cancel and change your level at any given time. You can give us $10 this month. You can give us $1 next month. You can cancel it the month after. You can hop back in at 20, hop back out. Whatever you need to do, you do it.
This isn't like The Matrix, guys. Choices are real. You can choose to do whatever you want at patreon.com. At any level, and we appreciate it. Yeah, you get access to all the old episodes. And let me tell you, they're ad-free, and they're on a topic we never do on the regular podcast. They're a great way to get some more talk from superheroes in your life.
Huzzah! So that's over at patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. That's patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. Matrix Revolutions will be over there right now. But now, let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question. What would you change? Diana, what would you change?
Hear me out. This movie... The plot, I change nothing.
Okay.
The dialogue, literally no one is allowed to have a speech. You can talk to people, no speeches. Nothing philosophical is ever discussed. This is a straightforward action film.
Morpheus?
Maybe he can do his, like, guns out pop speech. He can tell people to live. That's actually a fun speech. That we survived, we're still here, Zion still exists. But literally, no one is allowed to have a philosophical discussion in this movie. Because if you take that out, this is a fun, straightforward action movie. It's like, machines are coming to kill us, we need to find the Keymaster to get into the source to shut down the machines. That is the plot of this film. When you take out all the bullshit philosophy, and it's a straightforward plot that absolutely works as a plot of an action movie. So I'm going to remove most of the dialogue, and like, we'll cut a bunch of characters too. Like, we'll cut Seraph, sorry. We'll cut some other things, but we'll, like, the Merovingian won't speak. He will just be like, Keymaster's over there. I don't know. But yeah, I think if we just take out all the bullshit monologues and it's just a fun action movie made by two great directors, maybe it works. That's the closest I can get to fixing this film. Everything else is just too little changes or too big changes. So we're just going to watch some action. Andrew, what would you change?
I like that. I'm on board with that. I agree with you. There's no depth to this movie. They haven't written it. They don't understand it. So why do it? Make this. And it would be a disappointing follow-up to the first one still, but it would be fun in its own regard to be like, it's a fluff popcorn action movie. Get on board.
It would be an hour 45,
mm-hmm.
and it would just be straight action and a couple of one-liners.
Here's my change. I, too, want to get it down to an hour 45.
We would all love it to be an hour 45.
This movie was only 2 minutes longer than the first Matrix, and it felt like we watched this movie for 4 hours.
It did feel way longer, yeah.
My big change is to, and this is a ripple effect change, remove the Keymaster.
Oh.
The Keymaster doesn't exist.
Why?
And we delete everything in this movie from... The Burly Brawl fighting multiple Agent Smiths. So he has the meeting with the Oracle, and the Oracle's like, go find the Keymaster. She doesn't say that. Fight with Agent Smith, then everything in this movie is deleted from there forward until the ending. So I'm saying that after Agent Smith, they don't go to the Merovingian at the restaurant. Mm-hmm. That scene, deleted.
Okay, fair.
All right, Monica Bellucci in a bathroom kissing Neo. Deleted.
Aw, we can't lose that.
I'm sorry, it's gone.
Aw.
Maybe tragically, I'm going to actually say, and I'm going to stand by this even when it works, the entire highway chase scene, deleted. It is too long and self-indulgent. Even when it works, it is too few and far between. The mansion, gone. The highway chase scene, gone. This third act set piece of we need to do three simultaneous attacks is a great final action set piece.
That's fun.
So I think what it should be is the Oracle in that park bench scene, instead of saying, go find the Keymaster, she says, just, we don't need a special key for it. She's like, there's a building wired to explode. If you can circumvent the security, that's where the source of the Matrix is. And Neo goes, thanks. I'm going to go enact the third act of this movie now.
I'm going to go assemble a team. Yeah. I'm going to have to go back to Zion, get two more captains so we have enough people. That'll fill the time.
And there we go. And then we get fight scene with Agent Smith. That's like the big, like that's that big action set piece. And then, yeah, Back to Zion, arguments, we get the captains, we do a three-pronged approach, like the dramatic tension was whether or not we can sacrifice ships to go do this. It gives us a little more time maybe to play with the fact that Agent Smith is a real flesh and blood man.
Who could be on one of these ships?
And then it's like, we just need to do a three-pronged attack. And that's it. And then you get into the source code. So everything from restaurant to three captains meeting, deleted.
I love that. Completely deleted.
No mention of the Keymaster.
Of course, getting rid of the Merovingian makes the movie immediately better. Loses about 20 minutes that you don't need.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can absolutely get behind that. We're going to get there faster. We're going to get there funner.
And the other big thing I would say, too, is I know a lot of people love the highway chase scene. And obviously, like, they built a highway in Australia. They built infrastructure to film this movie. It was the most expensive thing imaginable. But they spent, and this is a true fact about the production of this movie, they spent more time filming that highway chase scene. So, like, when they leave the parking garage to they fly away, that was a longer time filming than the entire rest of the movie.
Ooh.
More man hours were spent on just the highway scene than every other scene and visual effect combined in this film. So if you cut that from the movie, and it's good, but it's not that good. If you cut that from the movie, maybe with that extra budget and man hours, we don't have the rubber CGI of the Burly Brawl. We have a little bit of extra choreography and other things. And I know that that's a very boring production kind of perspective on it, but one scene should not take up more filming and man hours than the entire rest of your movie. That's way too much importance to put on one scene.
No, I absolutely believe that. I get behind that. I love that. I think you could pick out things you want to keep. Like maybe the ghosts guard the source code.
Sure.
Because they're still cool. Yeah. Like they're still cool, but like they're not, you don't need them on a highway.
No.
You can put them anywhere. They're cool fighters, the fact that they phase.
You could have all the monsters and that stairwell fight be in the entrance to the building that Neo goes in.
Absolutely. We don't need it to be the Merovingian. The defects protect the source code for some reason.
Yeah.
That we don't need to know. But yeah, that is a great change. It's so much faster. It's so much more interesting. We cut a bunch of stuff we don't need. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Thank you. No problem. I love yours. This should just be a fluffier action movie because it doesn't have anything to say like the first movie did.
Yeah, I kind of felt like it should be more like Alien to Aliens, horror to action.
Right.
Yeah, just make it a straight up action movie. We've figured out the philosophy of the Matrix. Let's just fucking shoot some agents.
Let's have fun in there now. All right, I think we did it.
We did it.
That's going to be it for this week's episode of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, if you want to hear us talk about Matrix Revolutions, that's available over on our Patreon page.
Can't wait to watch it.
Can't wait to talk about it. And then next week on the Mainline Podcast, we're going to be talking about Spider-Man No Way Home, which is huge.
Oh my goodness, big one.
And then the week after that, we will be back with more Matrix, with Matrix Resurrections. In the meantime, if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach me on Twitter at Ivamy, Ivimey.
Oh, me? You can find me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And we'll talk to y'all next week.
Bye.